So I'm going to hit record. Okay. So thank you all for joining us today. And I want to give a big thank you to Jeff Cope, who will be speaking with us this hour. So Jeff is Director, Strategy and Innovation for the RTI Innovation Advisors. And so this interview is an element of IRI's digital transformation community. And the DXC is a community of organizations that are on the journey toward digital transformation. And through it, you can access case studies with fresh, relevant content. And we've got the latest one on Novozymes and then also the compendium of learnings that is on our website right now. And we're going to talk a lot about those today. We also have a virtual conference dedicated to digital transformation, and that was Digital Futures, and it was just last week, although it feels like a month ago now. I hope you enjoyed it. We have facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics, and if you want an invitation to those, just pop me an email and I'll forward you the invitation, and it does have the link in it. I can confirm that. And we have updates with additional resources and then webinar interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. And these always take place on the third Thursday of the month at 12 p.m. Eastern. And I'm going to be sure to sign all of you up for updates to the DXC. And if you don't want them, just let me know. A few housekeeping things. First session is being recorded, as you saw, and you will get a link to the recording. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there aren't any visuals here. Second, please hold all questions until the end. Once we open the floor to questions, you can type it in and I'll read it out for you, or you can unmute yourself and just jump in. So also, IRI is currently conducting a ballot to gain member approval of the proposal to combine with the National Association of Manufacturers and the Manufacturing Leadership Council. So this is an exciting opportunity for IRI. Together with the NAM and the MLC, IRI will be a bolder, stronger organization, better able to enhance the innovation leaders' ability to create new value and growth. Please vote and send your ballot to Ed Bernstein. Okay, now that we've gotten all of that out of the way, let's go ahead and get started. Jeff, thanks for joining me today. Sorry.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here. Appreciate the chance to talk with you all today.
Awesome. So let's just remind everyone what the digital transformation case studies are all about and tell us about the overall project that you guys did for us.
Sure. Be glad to. So, Lee just described some of the activities that are taking place in the digital transformation community, the DXC. And as IRI was getting that concept off the ground and starting to invest more time and effort and energy in helping IRI members, understand all of the aspects of digital transformation, we talked about, ways to support that and came up with this idea of let's go examine the digital transformation journeys of companies, in particular companies that we would call, that we have been calling legacy companies, companies who have been in business for many years, in some cases a couple hundred years, and have all of that know-how and expertise that they've developed over that time, who are now starting to figure out what does digital mean to us. So we wanted to intentionally look at legacy companies versus digitally native companies who, like Facebook, just sort of start from a digital perspective. So how have these legacy companies started into their digital journey? Where are they in their digital journey? What have they learned along the way? And so our goal from these case studies was to create a vehicle, a mechanism to share those lessons learned so that other legacy companies could sort of see themselves in this journey and maybe, figure out what their journey means and how to maybe take that journey a little bit smarter, a little bit wiser. So we put together a series of six case studies. Each is on a significant, actor in their industry. So Michelin, USG, DuPont, BASF, Brunswick Corporation, and Novozymes. I'm citing them in the order that we published them. So we created a case study for each of those companies, and then we just published a compendium of collective lessons learned from those six companies that just came out earlier this month.
Great. And yeah, we've had a great response to those case studies. I know a lot of people have really used them and appreciated them. So what surprised you along the way as you documented these journeys? You know, it was over the course of 2 years, so you can imagine right. some of the surprises you had.
But
what were some of the the most surprising aspects of what you learned while you were doing these?
It's been a fascinating couple of years getting to know these companies and seeing where they are in their journey, and really appreciate, you know, their openness to share their story with us. One of the things that really surprised me about this exploration was the extent to which digital transformation is enabling all kinds of innovative activity. These are legacy companies that are, you know, very well known, very successful, but they may not be top of mind when you think about innovative industries, right? Tire manufacturing, wallboard materials, right? These are important and essential products, but may not be high on your list of where you'd expect to find innovation flourishing. But we found it flourishing in all kinds of ways because of digital transformation. I think the types, so some examples of that, so types of impacts and innovation that we saw happening, you know, range from improved control of manufacturing processes, reduced waste and scrap, so much more efficient and effective, impactful manufacturing processes, a lot more speed and transparency in supply chains, and taking that leap to connect their customers into that transparency and seeing up into the supply chain, sort of the Amazon effect, coming to light. Much deeper engagement with customers and strengthening relationships with customers, whether that's B2B or B2C type customers. Faster throughput in R&D and just getting, you know, enabling R&D teams to increase their speed and breadth and what they're able to do on a day-to-day basis. I mean, the list just goes on and on, but it's been fascinating to see how this digital transformation effort has expressed itself in terms of impacts. Another thing that was a pleasant surprise to me was, you'll hear this from anyone who talks about sort of what does it take to make this successful? And usually it's, hey, this has to start at the top. Like, you need your top executives to be bought into this. And I think that's absolutely true. But the risk-taking element of that, the senior executive said, we've got to invest in this. We don't know what it is, but we got to figure it out. And so their willingness to take that risk, kind of put their own necks out there and say, like, yeah, we're going to go invest in this. And for that risk-taking perspective that sort of trickled down into the organization, I think was a pleasant surprise. Another thing that was surprising to see consistently across the six companies was this role of ambassador. And it seems to take life at different points in the journey, but I think all of the companies that we profiled recognize at some point we need to create an ambassador for digital. Someone who both understands the business, understands our world and how we operate, and understands our culture, but can also help other people see where digital can make an impact. And that role has been critical to the scalability and the expansion of digital, you know, more broadly across the company. So those are a few kind of pleasant surprises along the way.
Excellent. So what were the aha moments? Like, oh, wow, this is what's really working well or not working well in some cases.
Yeah. I think, so there's a couple that come to mind as like maybe the biggest aha moments for me. And let me say that I am not a digital transformation professional. I am I'm a researcher, I'm an innovation expert. And so I look at digital transformation through those eyes and that's how we've tackled these case studies, in looking at it from how is this a change management initiative, and what are all the aspects of change management that you have to take into account for what makes digital transformation successful. So through that lens, I think one thing that really stood out to me was the investment, what was the people aspect of these digital transformation initiatives. I think what the digital leaders in the six companies that we profiled, either knew from the start or realized along the way, was that this is about preparing our workforce for the future. This is about upskilling our workforce. This is not, a couple of years ago, everyone was worried robots are going to take all the jobs, and you know, we've kind of swung the other way, and now we can't find enough people to fill critical roles. This is about enabling a workforce for the future, blending digital skills, digital tools into the workforce you have already. And I don't think that's always apparent for someone who's looking at digital, say, what does this mean for us? So that was a big aha for me. The second, I remember interviewing, everybody calls him Dr. Voss, the CTO at USG. And this was back in early 2020. And he said, Amazon changed the way we do business, like it or not. A contractor wants to use his phone to see products that USG offers, place and track an order. He expects that experience now. And so to hear the CTO of this building construction products company talking about the Amazon effect was really kind of eye-opening to me, because it showed me that anyone who's a customer of Amazon is a customer of yours. And that expectation that e-commerce and transparent supply chains brings to a retail customer experience is moving directly into expectations on B2B types of companies. And so I think that's like a new aspect to the Amazon effect. There's books written about Amazon effect and its impact on retail. I think we're seeing it happen at a much broader scale in terms of re-establishing demands and expectations from your buyers. You know, so if you're not thinking along those lines of how can we replicate an Amazon type experience, you may need to take a closer look at what your customers are asking for and how you can best meet those needs.
What were the challenges what was just harder than you thought it would be for companies?
I think there's, what was great about these case studies and the conversations that we had was the forthrightness, the openness of the digital leaders and the digital teams that we talked to. Right, they understood why we wanted to create these profiles and these case studies, so that their experiences and lessons learned could be shared with others. And so they were pretty open about, hey, some things went great, some things didn't. And so there's some really good self-reflection that comes out in those case studies. Some things that stand out to me are it's relatively easy to get started. You pick a small team, you pick a couple of things to focus on, you do some early pilots and hopefully get to some early wins. Moving beyond that becomes a significant effort. How do you convince others in the organization that, hey, this digital thing really has some merit? It's got some potential. We think it could impact your part of the business. And so, again, if you applied a traditional adoption curve to digital transformation, moving out of those early adopters into starting up that slope of more mass adoption is a very difficult, it's difficult because it takes a lot of convincing. There's a lot of investment and time and socialization that has to happen. I think another challenge is picking the right partners. There's tons of external talent and experience to tap into for digital transformation efforts, from like, how do we clean up our data to, what code should we be using, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's massive players that say, we're a one-stop shop, we'll do it all for you. There's others that are specialized and more niche players. Because there's so many options, and because each company's digital transformation journey needs to be specific to them, it creates an extra challenge to say, what's the right type of partner? What's that right working relationship? And so it's got to be very customized. It's hard to say these are the types of firms you should work with, or these specific firms are the ones you should work with, because those needs are going to be so different. What also makes that challenging is thinking about what is that optimal balance of internal and external talent that you want to strike. You know, what's that ultimate equilibrium there? If you go too heavy on external partnering, you're not developing those internal skills. You're not creating that workforce of the future that we saw these other companies, you know, working to develop. So striking that balance, figuring out what types of expertise you need, creating that ideal working partnership, it's a tough challenge. And a lot of the companies, you know, probably the ones listening today and ones that will listen later, partnering is not a normal thing, right? You may have your suppliers, you may have a few strategic partners, but this usually requires a much more ecosystem kind of aspect to it. I think a third challenge relates to, you know, so there again, thinking like adoption curve. So there's that moving out of pilots into, you know, more early adopters. As you look to go kind of widely across the company, this isn't difficult as in like very hard to do, but I think it's difficult from like a time investment. All of these companies got to some point in their journey and said, okay, we need to have a consistent message that's going out across the company. And they're all creating their own version of digital curricula so that employees can master different levels of digital tools and topics. And so again, each of those efforts seems like it needs to be customized to the culture and the organization and how learning takes place. And so that's a sizable investment. So I think those are, you know, scaling this, finding the right partners, developing your curricula, those are some maybe unexpected challenges in the journey.
Did you ever hear any of the people you interviewed say, I wish I'd known, you know, X? You know, what are the things, what are their regrets?
I'd say a lot of them regret not starting sooner and not starting more simply. It's easy to get bogged down in, oh my gosh, our data is a mess. We can't do anything until we get our house in order. And some companies found a way to bypass that and say, our first efforts are going to have nothing to do with legacy data. We're not going to get caught up in, you know, how we clean that up, how we create consistency in the data. We're going to go start something new over here on the side, and we're not going to get, you know, entangled in that. And that was a pretty smart move. So generally, I'd say people were saying, I wish we'd started sooner. I wish we hadn't got bogged down in data issues. Some found a way around that. I think some felt like, I wish we hadn't jumped into digital transformation sort of out of fear of being left behind, because it's better to come at it from like, how is this going to enable something important in our organization? How does this, how might digital transformation efforts help us address a recurring business challenge, or help us fulfill something within our strategic goals for the corporation, for the organization? So come into it more of a opportunistic, what kind of opportunity does this create for us, versus a, oh my gosh, our competitors are doing this, we're behind, we've got to go like pour a bunch of money into this. That's sort of the wrong mindset.
That proactive versus reactive.
Yeah. And I think there's some cases where there's some companies that kind of went in big. Like, we went to the big consulting firms, we created a big team, you know, we were all in, and we probably overdid it. I think some of the lessons learned there have been more of start small, coordinated. You don't have to go big to figure this out. You know, go figure this out first with a small focused team, and then maybe you go big. So I think those are some of the, I wish we had, or I wish I had known, or I wish we'd done this differently. I think those are some recurring themes that I've heard.
So, you know, having seen all of these six very different companies, you know, what are the critical success factors that you saw across all of them for getting there to the level of digital transformation where, you know, they're comfortable enough to do a case study?
Right, right. And it was interesting that, again, I think each company that we profiled was at a different stage of their journey as we profiled them, right? And I would say most of the companies that we talked to, you know, say this is an infinite game, right? This is not you don't finish this journey, right? You start it and you progress through it. And we have some stages that we use to classify where they are. But once you're up to a certain level of proficiency and investment in this, it's something that continues. It doesn't ever really end. In terms of critical success factors, to give us a common lens and framework for evaluating very different companies who are going to be at different stages in the journey, we created a what we call a six lens framework that you know draws from traditional change management kinds of efforts. So we were trying to correlate, you know, how much of this digital transformation effort looks and feels like change management, and so we wanted to look consistently through these six lenses at the six companies. So I think I can use that to associate some critical success factors related to each lens. So for example, within the strategy lens, so think about digital strategy. I think we saw that the power of simple was highly effective. So being able to have a simple, coherent, clear strategy, something that could be articulated on one page, that could be communicated, you know, vertically, horizontally, and vertically. So everyone's kind of singing from the same songbook. That proved to be hugely beneficial for helping implement change and helping people understand what is it that we're doing and why are we doing it. And so I think, you know, companies like USG and DuPont, really all six, but like I remember USG, DuPont, Novozymes as being great examples of that. And they were willing to share, you know, those visuals and as examples in the case studies. Another lens is structures. And so thinking about how do you organize a team? What sort of talent, internal and external talent, do you pull together to accomplish this? One of the common success factors across the companies that we profiled was that initial team. Not only was it small and focused, it also sat outside of the IT group or the IT function. I think that was a really wise move in looking back in hindsight, because the IT has its purpose, its function. It's about, you know, protecting data and optimizing legacy systems. Digital transformation is intentionally different. And so trying to force those two together or make a digital transformation effort live within the IT function may hinder efforts and may slow down efforts, may kill something that could be flourishing outside of that. So I think that was a really, really smart move that I think five of the six companies initially structured their team to sit outside of, and in some cases even, you know, report up to R&D or report up to marketing. But the cross-functional aspect and the collaboration with IT certainly, but not set it up within the IT shop. From a resources standpoint, I think, and this is about sort of the human, this is the human aspect of this, right? This is the internal and external talent that you pull together and assemble to support digital transformation. I think the right mindset there is to look at digital transformation as how are we going to upskill our existing and future workforce? Mm-hmm. And that's a useful guide to say not only like who do we need to bring, you know, how do we put the band together initially? Who are going to be some of those early evangelists that help us really advocate? But also, you know, who, how much of this is internal talent versus external talent? DuPont did a great job of finding a recruitment platform so that they were grooming talent to then bring into the organization. So, you know, finding those ways to leverage both internal and external talent, I think is a key there. Culture and change management is another lens that we use. And that is, that's essentially, I mean, that is the critical success factor, that this is not a technology play, right? This is a change management initiative. And if you're viewing it that way and you're thinking about it holistically, you're going to have a better chance of this really being accepted and catching fire and being able to scale across the organization. Two more lenses, rounding out the six. Technology and data, again, can be where a lot of people's minds go to when they think digital transformation. Like, okay, this is about investing in new technology, right? We need a supercomputer, or we need to teach everybody how to code. Maybe, yes, certainly part of it. But I think the right mindset that we saw for how to think about technology and data is, where can we, what technologies, what data platforms should we invest in that are going to help us enable greater collaboration or break down silos across the organization, create new connections across divisions and functions and or with our customers and our partners. So you want to pick platforms and pick tools that are going to enable those kinds of activities. Also, you know, pick tools and platforms that are going to be relatively easy to learn and adopt by your staff. They may not be digitally savvy today, but how can you get them there? How can you pick the right tools and platforms and teach them these new skills and capabilities so that they become digitally savvy? The last lens is opportunities and offerings. And here we saw some really amazing output from the digital transformation efforts. And I think we saw that, in generally speaking, that digital products are going to scale across an organization much faster and much more easily than digital capabilities. Digital capabilities is, again, about upskilling the workforce. It needs to happen. It's going to take curricula. It's going to take work to expand those capabilities. But digital products that can be developed perhaps by a core team can start to be deployed and help create greater impact, maybe faster or ahead of this upskilling of the staff. So a couple good examples of that. In the USG, I love this one. In the USG case study, they talked about how wallboard, if you stayed in a hotel, you know what I'm talking about, right? Some hotels, you hear the noise from like three rooms down the hall. Other hotel rooms, it's like you're in a tomb, right? It's super silent. Most of that comes from the selection of the wallboard when construction is taken, or when the building is designed. And so USG had created an actual environment where they could bring somebody into their innovation lab, and they could experience the audio difference that one type of wallboard versus another makes. Super cool. Helped them really, you know, upsell a lot of wallboard. Hard to do when you're in a pandemic and no one's traveling. So they created a virtual acoustic studio so that their main buyers, architects and designers, could experience that. They could rough in a space that they're trying to design and virtually test out different types of wallboard and kind of prove the point that, okay, this one spec on this particular wallboard, you know, there's a metric, and it varies depending on that. But you don't experience a metric. This gave them a way to experience why this wallboard would be more advantageous. So there's lots of examples of that throughout the case studies, and I think finding those business challenges, creating digital products to solve those in new ways is where we see digital transformation really start to demonstrate some successes. I could go on and on about digital products. I mean, we've seen some really, and we've profiled in these case studies, some really cool offering. So, but I know we want to get to Q&A at some point soon. So, you know, I can come back to that if people want to hear more about products, but let's keep rolling with your initial questions.
Yeah. So, you know, the next is kind of looking to the future. You know, where do you see this going? What challenges do you see on the horizon that we need to be preparing for?
Yeah, we've talked a little bit today about some of those current challenges. Like, what are some of those challenges inherent in digital transformation for any company, any organization? And we just touched on, you know, picking technologies and data platforms that can help unlock data, you know, create new levels of collaboration, et cetera. And that's done today within the context of a single organization. So how can we have fewer silos within our company? How can we get more democratization of data and have more people able to access more data and create new types of collaboration, right? It's fantastic. I think if you look at where that's going, right? To me, the next logical step is, how do you start to break down silos and divisions and create more data sharing between organizations? Okay, so start to move that outside of your organizational boundary. So think about companies along a value chain, or companies that have select or preferred partners, or between a supplier and a customer, right? I think that's gonna be the next level of opportunity and challenge that digital transformation will unpack. We're starting to see some signs of that with Novozymes. In the case study that we recently published, they've got a process that they call Engage-ovation. And so they're creating platforms to openly share data with their customers. So R&D related data is being fed into this Engage-ovation platform. Customers who are, you know, sharing manufacturing specific data coming out of their plants, they're feeding that into the platform, and they're able to crosstalk that data. Is creating the opportunity there for them to collaborate in new ways, move new products to manufacturing faster and in new ways. And so I think that's a sign of things to come. Like, when do supply chains and strategic partnerships start to take that next level and say, like, all right, we're going to have open data sharing of certain types of data? That's kind of a utopian view on data and partnering. And I think it's got a lot of promise, but there's also a lot of complexity to that. So it's, you know, we're going to have to see new levels of data security, new levels of trust, new levels of transparency. So those are not easy things. I think those are some of the next frontiers of digital transformation.
Yeah, we're definitely hearing that from members. You know, what is that line between sharing and keeping what you need to keep secure and all that? And, you know, how do you keep it secure?
I mean, it's a valid question. It's a question you have to answer within your own organization, right? Who is authorized to access certain data? And what are they allowed to do? Can they read it? Can they edit it? Who are they allowed to share it with? So, how we deal with data just within our own organization needs a lot of thought, right? But, I don't see it ending there. I think it's, okay, now what are we sharing and with whom, and what are we getting back, and what are we going to do with that? And who owns whatever great things come out of it. So I'm not saying they're not thorny issues, but I think they're ripe with opportunity.
Definitely. So we're going to open the floor to questions, and, you know, while you all kind of type in and mull them over, just, you know, one last question for you, Jeff. So, you know, what recommendations do you have? You've studied 6 different companies, you've synthesized all of it. You know, what words of wisdom have you gotten from it?
I'll try to channel the words of wisdom that I've asked for from the digital leaders, the main actors and advocates and architects that I've spoken with over the last couple of years. I think I've already said one of them, but it's fair saying again that we've got to recognize that digital transformation is a change management initiative. We're selling it short if we're thinking of it as a technology investment or a data quality cleanup, you know, initiative. It's got to be thought of more holistically than that, and be, you know, sort of to really gain the benefit and traction that you're going to need to go organizational, you know, across the full organization. And it's going to require certain types of change agents who can help you along the way. Those ambassadors that I spoke about before, someone who understands the business, can see the benefit that digital can provide, and can help start to advocate for that, you know, across other key stakeholders. It seems to be pretty consistent. The message was pretty consistent that you've got to start with top executive support. This is not a grassroots effort kind of activity. It's going to be very difficult to scale it if that's what's happening. Top level executive support means that there's funding, there's voice, there's you know, air support. It aligns to strategy. Like, you want to have all those kind of right conditions before you go too deeply into any kind of digital transformation effort. I think there's a word of warning, and like, don't do shiny object. Don't get shiny object syndrome. You want to start with identifying, all right, what are some key business challenges? I love that, you know, one of our interviewers, or one of our interviewees, talked about boomerang problems. So what are those problems that just keep coming back, right? We throw something out as a solution and the problem keeps coming back. What are those boomerang problems? How can we look at solving those in a new way through digital means? You're better off to start there and then work towards solutions versus, you know, hey, there's this cool new technology out there. How could we apply it? You don't want to be tech push. Start small. We've talked about that today. Start small. Get a team together that's going to collaborate across functions, that represents different functions. Place that team very high up in the organization, again, to have that kind of air support and prioritization. And then later that can cascade down or cascade out more widely. I think that high level position for that team is critical in the early days, as is collaboration. So working with other business functions, other business departments, IT, corporate security, R&D, marketing, you name it. They should have a voice in this, right? They should be connected to what the vision is. And so this is, you know, kind of built from the start as a collaborative effort. And I guess the last one is, you know, lean on that abundance of external talent and expertise that's out there, but don't lean on it too much, which is a difficult balance, right? But think of this ultimately as upskilling your workforce of the future. And so that the partners that you're bringing to the table, that you're working with, kind of understand that as well. Like, they're helping maybe equip your internal talent and capabilities versus being a replacement for it.
Excellent. So we've had our first question come in. So it's, how do organizations effectively tackle work process transformations as they improve their digital footprints?
Work process transformation. Yeah, I think that's a great question, and it ties back to the business challenges that I was just talking about. I think you first have to identify what are those business challenges that we want to try to tackle. And then you can start to break those down. Why is this a challenge? You know, what are the workflows that are enabling this problem or we're hindered by this problem? So I think moving from business challenge to then workflows that relate to that, or work processes that relate to that, can help you then highlight, well, where are the points in that process that need to change? And are we changing them we're just replacing it with a different work process, or is there a technology or digital solution that needs to be incorporated into that? So I feel like there's this logic flow, right? Of identify those challenges, pick the ones you want to work on, characterize that work process, and then you've got the context you need to start to look for potential solutions. Those might be off the shelf, they might be custom built, but until you know where in that process the needs are greatest and what the impact of making that change to the process will be, you know, again, don't do shiny object syndrome. Don't start with technology and try to push it at a work process. Really kind of define where in that process change is needed. What kind of impacts do we want to measure to demonstrate improvement? Then you're at a point where you can start to look at technology. I hope that helps answer the question.
Excellent. I think it does. Thank you. Does anyone want to type anything else in or unmute and jump in with a question before we wrap up here? All right. Well, I think we covered all the questions people had. We covered a lot.
So, yeah, this hour flew. Wow.
It really did. So
yeah.
Thanks so much, Jeff. I appreciate you expanding on all the stuff from those case studies. It's a lot of content to get through. And
yeah, there's a lot of great stories there. I would encourage, you know, everyone here live or watching later, or, you know, dig into those resources. There's some great stories there in the individual case studies. The compendium maybe is a good starting point to sort of give you like the higher level view of all that, but all of it's on the IRI website and should be a great resource for you as you figure out, you know, what's next for us in our digital transformation journey. I want to say a huge thank you to Lee and to IRI for being a great partner over the past 2 years as we've started, you know, our own journey in exploring digital transformation in these legacy companies. It's been a great and enlightening experience for us. So we really appreciate, Lee, all of your leadership in this, and a huge thank you to the six companies who were willing to kind of open their doors and share their stories with us. So I want to give a shout out to all of you for that.
Yeah. You know, obviously, we really appreciate all of the time and work that all of the case study subjects and you guys put into all of this. It was definitely a journey. And indeed, we had our own journey on digital transformation.
That's right.
But it's been fantastic. And I really think it's all benefited members immensely. I think, yeah, there's just so much to unpick. And because we have such a wide variety of companies and industries, size, shape, everything represented, you know, there really is something for everyone there, you know. And yeah, I do suggest, you know, if you don't have time to go through all of them, read that compendium of learnings and then maybe pick which case study you think is most relevant to your organization too. We actually did just get another question in. You know, in smaller organizations, you know, fewer than 500 FTE, how would you suggest structuring your team?
Can you say that question one more time? I want to make sure I heard it right.
So in smaller organizations, those with fewer than 500 FTE, how would you suggest structuring your team?
Well, I think even in these larger organizations, most of the six companies that we, probably all of the six companies that we profiled are significantly larger than that. We saw that they generally started with a very small team. In the case of, I'm thinking about USG as sort of an extreme example. They started with a team of three people. They had someone that represented R&D, someone who represented IT, and someone who represented marketing. And they got together. They were charged with, go figure out this digital thing for the company. And so they formed this sort of collaboration, command and control kind of team. They were the ones who set the vision and the strategy and then started to pull in others. So I think even in the case of a very, very large organization, that need to start small or that option to start small can really pay dividends. So I think the same would be true within a smaller than 500 person organization. You know, to start with, maybe it's not so much a number of the team, but maybe do you have the right people represented at the table from the start. So, you know, maybe it's a small team that's, again, kind of representing R&D or innovation, new product development, that's representing IT, that's representing marketing or sort of like consumer-facing, customer-facing aspects. So I think start small with the intent to organize, collaborate, figure out where to start. That can look for those business challenges that we want to address, those boomerang challenges. So I think, yeah, I think you can start very small, two or three people who have the key is to have the authority and the freedom to operate from your top management. And that's effectively communicated, you know, throughout the organization, you know, hey, this is our team. They're going to figure it out. You're going to hear from them. We totally support this. So I think there's a couple of elements to it, but I think even looking at these larger organizations, you can see a scalable model that fits in a smaller company. I'm happy to answer more on that if there's a follow-up question to that. Hopefully that answers your question.
Nothing so far, but and just a comment, you know, just great summary. And, you know, this person shared the recap of the case studies with their CTO. The response to your response is, you know, thanks, great session. So I think we're all set there. Again, I want to say a big thank you to you, Jeff, for joining me today for the interview and for answering questions. And, you know, thank you to all of you. I'm very apologetic about the link situation, but you got here in the end, and I'll send you the link to the recording too. So if you join late, you'll be able to catch up. But I hope you'll all join me November 18th. One of our case study subjects, Brunswick, I'll be interviewing two individuals from there. So looking forward to kind of doing a deep dive on that one, because that was the outlier, wasn't it? That was the one where they started in IT. So we'll get to hear a really different approach there.
Yeah, I think you're going to hear about the sort of customer-facing aspect of that. They've got some really interesting things that they've done with deeper engagement with their customers. So that should be a great one.
Excellent. I'll look forward to that. And you all should look forward to it too. All right. Thanks so much, Jeff. And thanks to all of you. And I'll see you in a month.
My pleasure. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.